over that nobody will assume? What are you going to do with the bag full of stuff that's left over that nobody will assume? You are so smart. Do you know how I learned that? Through a broken relationship. I had a horrible situation that to this day has not been resolved. And I was called into a meeting and there was a pile of stuff, and I didn't call it trash, left in the middle of the floor when we walked out of that room. And I was praying one day, walking, and I'm saying, but God, all that stuff is in my mind still laying in the floor in the middle of that room. I picked up some stuff that belonged to me. I did. I took responsibility. I said, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. Took my stuff. This woman would not take her stuff. I couldn't make her take her stuff. My old way would have been to pick it up and try to do something about it. And I'm walking and I'm crying out to God. I'm like, what happens to me? It's that stinky garbage. In my mind, it was still sitting there in the middle of the floor. And he said, Sheila, if you will put that in my circle, I will make sure that it gets put where it belongs. But if you pick it up, I can't do anything with it. If I assume what's in God's circle, it like ties God's hands behind his back. Now that's just my idea. That was something I felt like the Lord showed me. So I was able to leave that mess, what I thought was a mess, but it stopped stinking because instead of it being unattended, now God was taking care of it. And it's still to this day, it's his job. You guys can go sit down. It's still to this day his job to convict, to control, to give wisdom, and to change. And he has changed me by me assuming my responsibility and not picking up something that didn't belong to me. But I learned that about putting it into God's circle through conflict. Linda?
The scary thing is if there's stuff left and you see it. In a relationship, even like in a marriage, and I'm doing my circle, but he's not doing his stuff, and I darn well know it. It's scary.
It's very scary.
Control, but that's not my problem.
It's not your problem. It belongs to God. Yes.
I'm there now, and I'm trying to figure out how to handle the situation. It hasn't become a conflict yet, but my boundaries have been invaded. So how do you tactfully, without causing conflict,
you may not be able to do it without conflict. I think that's the right answer. Because Linda and I were talking earlier, we think conflict is a bad thing. Conflict doesn't mean I have to be angry. It doesn't mean that I have to shoot you down, cut you off at the knees. It just means that I have to be honest about what's going on.
And if they get mad about it, it's their
circle. That's in their circle. See? Good. That's the water. Good, Anne. That's great. That's the water in their glass. That's exactly right. Because chances are they will get angry. That happened to me just at the end of the school year. Some things have been going on all year, disrespect and dishonor. And I went to the person and I said, she had taken something of mine. And I said, do you know what happened to this? And she got real defensive, really, really angry. And I said, you know, you've dishonored me and you've disrespected me all year. And the only thing that I want to say to you is I will give you anything that belongs to you. But I do want you to ask. But I will give it to you. I'm not trying to keep anything from you that belongs to you, but you've taken these things that are mine. And all I'm saying is I want you to ask because it's disrespectful and dishonoring for you not to ask. She threw me out of her office. She threw me out of her office. You know what? I'm okay. I'm really okay. I didn't like it. But it still needed to be said, and I could still say it in a respectful and caring way. I've had to do that with my mom. She would call me on the telephone and we'd be okay for a few minutes, but she always had an agenda, and before too long she's calling me names and like raking me over the coals, and I finally realized, you know what, Mom? I love you, but I'm not gonna let you talk to me like that. It's disrespectful. And you are, I feel that you are emotionally and verbally abusing me. And then she says, you only call it abuse when I tell you things about yourself that you don't want to hear. And I said, Mom, I'm not giving you permission. I love you, but I'm not letting you do this. And if I have to, I will hang up. And I would like to be really generous and say that maybe three times in a kind voice, you know, lowering my voice, and eventually a few times I've had to hang up. And I've had to tell her, I won't talk to you on the phone anymore. I love you, but I won't talk to you on the phone anymore. And by doing that, now we communicate through letters, and at first they were pretty hostile, but I would write her back. I wouldn't even address those things. They had nothing to do with me. They were her stuff. I wouldn't even address it. And now they're getting so the letters are shorter and they're just a little bit sweeter, and I'm thinking that eventually, you know, I may be able to talk to her on the phone again. But see, that's okay. You may not be able to avoid conflict, but conflict's not a bad thing. Because conflict is for the purpose of restoration, isn't it? If you think of conflict for the purpose of tearing down, then it's a bad thing. But if conflict is done, I have a friend right now who is talking about leaving her husband. Now, that's a conflict. But she wants to do that in order to open his eyes to what's going on in their life, that she's really serious about what's going on in their life. And I said to her, let's keep in mind the goal. The goal is reconciliation. The goal is not separation. The goal is not divorce. You may have to separate for a period of time, but the goal is reconciliation. But there's going to be conflict, and it may come to that. Separation is not necessarily a bad thing, but if you keep the goal in mind, it's reconciliation. Okay? Did this help a little bit for you to see? I was so freed up that walk that I had that day. I'm like, God, I've never heard anybody say this before. And so I just feel like that's what the Lord showed me. It's like the elephant in the living room, and everybody's walking around the elephant in the living room. Now, once I identified the elephant in the living room with my mom, she started apologizing to me for the dust that was in the corners. I said, Mom, we're not talking about that. That stuff has been dealt with. That's not the problem. The problem is the elephant that's in the living room. She still has never come to the place where she's willing to acknowledge that there's an elephant in the living room. And that's okay. I can't make her. That's God's job. But I am not going to deny that there's an elephant in the living room. I'm going to operate in truth because God's going to give me grace for that truth.
So when somebody steps into your circle and you want them to get out, is there a way to state it that where it's an I statement and not a...
Yes. If you can always think when you're dealing with people, if your words do this, this is how it makes me feel when you do that. If you make it point back to you, but if you're going you always, if they're you statements and you're pointing your finger in their verbally, maybe not physically, but verbally pointing your finger in their face, you're going to escalate the conflict. But if you bring it back, what can they say? When you do this, you know, like I said to that person at work, I feel like you disrespect me and you dishonor me. She wanted me to, she thought that I had been talking to someone. I don't know why she had that idea, but probably because that's what she does. And she wanted me to, like, tell her, who have you been talking to? What are you talking about? And all I could say to her is, it has been my observation that you treat me with disrespect and dishonor. That's what I've experienced at your hands. I've wanted to quit. I've gone home in tears because I've been so disrespected, and she wouldn't accept that.
Isn't there times though where you say there is times where you have to say you, because there is an onus on them, isn't there? I mean,
yes, yes. When you could, but you could say, when you, you're right. When you do this, when you did this, it made me feel. That is you putting it there. You really did do this. I'm not going to deny that you did this. You really did do this. But when you did this, this is how it makes me feel. You bring it back to yourself. It's not a finger pointing, shaking it in your face, but you're going to have to work through some anger issues probably before you can get to that, because I didn't talk about that at the beginning, but the anger needs to be sorted through before you can really even begin to identify. Because anger stops the progress. It stops the process of being able to move through these circles of responsibility. And, you know, we have some stuff on anger. That's a whole nother thing, too. But it's really important. I don't want to minimize that. It's really, really important that you have to forgive. And I'm sorry, even if they don't ever do what's right, you as a believer have a responsibility to God, not to them, to forgive. And that's for your benefit. It's not for their benefit. It only lets them off your hook where they don't belong anyway and puts them on God's hook so that he can do something with it. But you still have to forgive. You have to forgive. And I know that that's hard, and I personally believe it's one of the hardest things that we're asked to do as Christians. And the reason that I think that is because one day I was sitting in the church service, and the Lord asked me to do something that I didn't want to do. It was embarrassing to me, and I argued with him, and then I ended up doing it. And it was at the Lord's Supper, and because I was obedient to that, I felt like he gave me some insight that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And when you're at the table, people say if you forgive, you forget. You know that one, right? But what is God asking us to do when we go to the Lord's table? He's asking us to remember. He's saying, I want you to remember what my forgiveness cost me. When you forgive, your forgiveness costs you something. And God doesn't program us to forget. He doesn't program us to forget, but we do send it away and no longer hold it against them. Now we can call it back up and we can remember it, but we cannot any longer hold it to their account. Any more questions?
What if someone refuses to acknowledge or talk to you about any issues, like you said, that person comes to your office, but someone you don't, then you would still have to be in contact.
Mm-hmm.
But they out
and say,
I will not talk about anything that you feel is negative. You know, they won't allow you to engage with
them. Well, that's one thing.
Oh, everything is fine.
No, you don't. You know, that was one of the issues with my mom, is that she would do inappropriate things, and then I was supposed to just swallow that and pretend like everything was okay. And I just said to her, I'm not going to pretend that what you do doesn't hurt me. Now, I still can act toward her in a loving and honoring way, and it just came to me. I had a situation like that actually still exists, and it was just, but fortunately, it was a person I went to church with. It wasn't someone that lived in my house, but it was just someone that I saw, but it was very uncomfortable. And I felt like the Lord said to me, if you've forgiven them, treat them as if they're forgiven. And ask him to show you what that looks like.
So even though those behaviors may continue,
if the behaviors continue, it's just like my mom talking to me. I can say to her, I love you, but I'm not going to allow you to talk to me like that. You can draw some things that are in your circle. You can be real honest. I have a book that's called Finding Your Way Home. And one of the things that it said in there that was so profound to me is that when we pretend that what someone else is doing isn't hurting us, that's not really love. That's not really love. That really is us codependent, picking up their stuff, isn't it? That's not love. And so for me to honor my mother was for me to be honest with her about how what she was doing made me feel.
And the things in the past.
I've done with those. Yeah. And some other issues came up with other family members who didn't come to me and find out what was going on. And I have a couple of sisters that don't speak to me. And I think it has to do with that. And I've tried to resolve it, but they don't want to, you know, they don't want to talk to me about it. But my brother-in-law told my husband it was that bad things happened to all the girls, and they just had to let go of it. And my husband said, but this has nothing to do with the past. This has to do with what's going on in the present. She continues to verbally abuse her. They didn't know that. They never tried to find out that. So, you know, it does continue. It continues, but, you know, I just had to put some space there. And I wasn't even comfortable with that. That seemed like I was being selfish. It felt like I was abandoning my mother. It touched all the lies that I believed a good daughter is not supposed to do. If I'm a good Christian, I'm supposed to do this. I'm constantly going before the Lord and asking him to show me what is the truth about these situations. And I don't do it as often because for a long time I kept thinking, surely there's something else I can do. And so I would pray about it and I would say, God, if there's anything you want me to do, I'll do it, I'll do it. And for a little while there were some things that I could do. I wrote notes and kept the lines of communication going. But when I got a birthday card and a Thanksgiving card or something came back in the mail unopened in my sister's handwriting, returned to sender, I'm thinking, I think this is a clear message God saying, Sheila, you have done enough. It really belongs to me. Let me deal with it. But it still hurts. I still don't like it. but I'm getting better at accepting that this is the way that it is, because other people have some choices to make. And my mom would say, well, you've done this to yourself, the fact that I have these broken relationships. You've done this to yourself. Well, you know, you can say that, but that doesn't make it true. And I just have to know what it is that I'm supposed to be doing and be obedient to that. I still pray for them. I love them. And I pray someday we will be reconciled. But see, God has taught me so many things through that that hasn't been wasted. He doesn't waste anything, even these negative things. Marcella?
It just reminds me how this ties in with what was last night, because I do have a relationship where I want to get over it and talk about it, but it's just constant. It's my mother. And so I have to get back to the lie, not just not picking up her John.
Yes.
But I get back to the lie. Why is it that I don't want her to feel like I disapprove of her?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to tell her and make her sad, because then the lie is I have to help her. You know, as a 5 or 6 year old child, I'm responsible, and we all kind of hear that cycle babble, like you're not responsible for someone else's feelings. But that's where the circles of responsibility come in together, because I'm feeling, well, I can't draw that circle because that's my responsibility.
Because
you're
believing.
She doesn't think that she's a bad mother when actually she's not a good mother, but I don't want her to feel like she's a bad mother because that would make me a bad daughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many can relate to that? Oh, hands go up all over the room. Okay.
I used to, but I don't now.
Yeah, I don't either. Yay for us. God's bringing healing, and He brings healing in different places of each of our lives. So that means that where I'm suffering and where I'm weak, I need for you to be strong. And where you're suffering and you're weak, you need for me to be strong in the Lord, because His strength is made perfect in weakness. It's okay to say that I'm weak, because God has probably brought somebody into your life that's already been down that road a little bit, and they can walk alongside you. And we are not supposed to be doing this alone. We are supposed to be doing this together in community. And so many times we believe, well, if I was a really good Christian, I wouldn't have these problems in my life. I would have it all together. And I'll tell you what, I may have had it all together at one time, but I certainly forgot where I put it. You know, it's like, please, on that one. I did think I had it all together.
Let me just give this. I have a relationship which I've been able for a long time, and pretty much drawn the lines that you want.
Good.
And that person acknowledges their responsibility, but refuses to change. So I've put a separation in here, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's been a hard thing.
It is hard. It is very hard. It is very hard. Do you know what? If you think about this, did Jesus heal every person that He came in contact with? No. Did He absolutely wear Himself out night and day, touching and fixing? No. When the rich young ruler came to Him and said, "What can I do to be saved?" And that rich young ruler turned and walked away, Jesus was sad. But He didn't chase after him. He didn't chase after him. And
some
who's... Yes, but that man made a choice. I think when... Yeah, you're right. But I'm saying is that it's not always appropriate for us to chase after. We do what we can do in our circle, and we pray and we trust God that He'll cause even these things to work out for our good and His glory.
We don't chase after.
Yes,
but
God will. That's right. But in that case, that was the human. That was God in human form, and that's our example. I know Dr. Lynch was some things that I've looked at, videotapes and stuff, sessions that I, counseling, training things I've done, and he tried to on marriage and family counseling. There are no examples in the Bible of healthy relationships. None. Not one. So what is our example? Christ. It will always be our example. So if I'm struggling in a relationship, I need to go back to what would Jesus do? But that really is true. And the truth is, He did not chase after that rich young ruler. He didn't. And so that, in a sense, I can take a deep breath and say, sometimes it's appropriate to let them go. the prodigal son. The father loved him. There's so much more in that story than we get. There's so much more. But you know what? He didn't stop waiting for him at the end of the road, looking. You know, because when he came, he saw. Because he was waiting, looking, praying, hoping to be reconciled with him. So we have all of those examples. And that's what you have to go back to. You go back to the Word of God, hold that plumb line up, because most of our thinking doesn't match up. It really is thinking, thinking. Okay? Now, were you going to do a close, or did you want me to go ahead and finish right now, and then we'll be done?
Well, if you want to finish your end of the speaking part, and then I have some other
Okay. Okay. Well, we were going to do some questions and answers, and then I was just going to kind of close with this. So, actually, I had kind of written out what I wanted to say, and then the Lord reminded me this morning of this, and so I'm going to do this. Psalms 126. I want you to realize as I'm reading this that the word has one interpretation, but many applications. And in this Psalms 126, I'm using an application. When the Lord brought back the captive ones of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with joyful shouting. Then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for them. We are glad. Restore our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. Those who sow in tears shall reap with joyful shouting. He who goes to and fro weeping, carrying his bag of seed, shall indeed come again with a shout of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. And when I read that, I thought to myself, I was so blessed by the fact that they were restored, that they were filled with laughter, that they sang for joy. Because of this, other people said, what amazing things the Lord has done. What joy! There was sadness and tears, but singing and shouts of joy came. And my story is one of brokenness. And the places that I've been, people have told me to shut up. Be quiet. Don't tell it. They were doing it to protect themselves. I did not understand. I felt shamed. And I came to the place where I thought, Lord, if I don't tell people how broken I was, then how can they rejoice with me at your healing? If we're going to hide our pain, no one will be able to experience our healing and that God has done it. And they won't be able to say, what an amazing God she has. So I'm telling you, I will not hide. I will not pretend. These are the things that have happened to me, that have formed me and made me cry after God, long for him. The hurts have been there, but God has brought healing. And through the pain, our pain, God has brought healing to my husband, to me, to my marriage, to other people because he's used us in their lives. And there was a time my girlfriend last night told Anne, when I very first went to the church that we were at, we're not there now, for 3 years I cried. Every time somebody see me, they're like, who is this woman and what is she so unhappy about? But I really, God just put a blindness over me that I thought it was okay to be real. I thought I was in a place, and these girls tell me now, nobody else was doing it. We thought you were weird and blah, blah, blah. But then when she went through a period of time when she couldn't stop crying and she was freaking out and couldn't stop crying, she said to herself, I'll call Sheila. She cries, she'll know what to do. What if I had hid that? What if I had hidden that? She wouldn't be where she's at today. God wouldn't have used it. He gives purpose to our pain, which makes my pain healed a little bit. Every time I help someone because of the pain I've been through, my pain is healed a little bit more and a little bit more. And during that three-year period of time, actually it was longer than 3 years, but during that three-year period of time when I was really crying a lot, I cried out to God and I said, am I going to be sad for the rest of my life? I don't want to be sad. My husband was so tired of me crying. My youngest son was home and the other two were finished with school, and he would look at me and he would go, oh, Mom, you're not going to cry again. And I'd have to go running into the bedroom and just close the door and throw myself across the bed and just sob. I just could not stop being sad. Such a grieving inside of me. And one day I had asked God a bunch of times, but after about 3 years, I felt like he led me to Psalms 30. And I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. It's about praising God, but it gets down to the last two, three verses, Psalms 30, verses 10, 11, and 12. Hear, O Lord, and be gracious to me. O Lord, be thou my helper. Thou hast turned for me my mourning into dancing. Thou hast loosed my sackcloth and girded me with gladness, that my soul may sing praise to thee and not be silent. O Lord my God, I will give thanks to thee forever. And I knew at that moment that the sadness would end. It didn't end that day, but I knew that it would end. And I think I have written here, I haven't stopped being sad since October 1st of 1989, but sadness does end, praise God. And then June 1993 is when I had this, and it said, God has replaced the sadness with joy and peace. And I knew that the sadness was end, and this is the reason why. When it ended, I was going to have a new song, and God was going to be glorified. And isn't that what's happened? But the sadness didn't end that day. But I knew that there was hope. And I remember my husband came home from work, and I shared that word with him that God had given me that day. And we both wept, and we got down on our knees, and we prayed, and we claimed, and we held on to Psalms 30. God, you've promised it's going to end. And it gave us both hope that we were going to get through that. And the sadness ends, and it will for you too. I mean, if you're in a sad place, just know God's not going to be glorified if you stay there. He's going to bring you out of it. And he said to Peter, Satan has asked to sift you, Peter. And when you turn, because Peter was going to fail, and God knew he was going to fail. Jesus said, I've asked that when he does this, that when you turn, you'll strengthen the brother. So, you know, that's what we do, failure and sadness, and we turn around and use that in the lives of other people. Anne?
In the same, well, not the same one, 34, there was a time where I thought that God wasn't there, because I thought, there was a point where he told me, where God showed me, he said, I did save you, yes. I did help you, and I'm like, when did that happen? And then he showed me, I came back, and I read the scripture, and after I read the scripture, he brought to my memory when I had called out to him, and when he started, and it was this, and it's Psalms 34, verses 17 and 18, and you can read on from there, but this was the one that really impacted me, these two. It says, the righteous cry out, and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all of their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and save those who are crushed in spirit. They're crushed.
Yes.
Yeah. And he already saved me.
Yeah.
And he does that for all of us.
He does. Psalms 34. That's actually the second time today we've heard that passage, and it's underlined and has dates on it in my Bible too. Aren't Bibles great? I mean, this is the one that I have all those markings in. I have a new one, but I keep coming back to this one because I can actually find places without even knowing what I'm looking for because it's marked and I can recognize it. But God, through the pain, God brought healing, and he gave us that promise of Psalms 30. And I'm going to repeat Psalms 126, 2. Our mouths were filled with laughter, and our tongues with songs of joy. And this is what my faithful God can do. He is in the restoration business, and I am so thankful to be a recipient of his restoration. And now to be a participant in offering his restoration to other people. I am so thankful for that. The seeds of comfort take root in the soil of adversity. Just know that. You know, you're gonna turn around and take the things that you've done and have happened to you, and you're gonna be able to use them in the lives of other people. I have a few other things, but I think that's enough. I think that's a good place to end. Yeah?
I have just a quick question.
Okay.
All this stuff that we've been learning, it seems like it's hardest to share it with people you're closest
yes.
to, and that maybe you want to share it with the most.
Yes.
And how, I mean, can you, what kind of suggestions for sharing this with people that are like, oh man, I wish they were here to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
I wish, because it's just hardest for me to, you know, to share that kind of stuff. You know, you kind of just feel like, well, who am I to say,
ah.
to hear this?
Ah. Is that one of your lies? I don't have anything to say for anybody to listen to. Who am I? You know what I would say to that? I would say pray and ask the Holy Spirit to give you an opportunity. You might be shocked at what He does. You might be shocked. You know, if you pick up one of the tapes that has some of the teaching on it and you say, man, this really helped me, would you be interested in listening to it? No. Maybe it's too hard for you to share it personally yourself, but, you know, and then pray as you're giving it to them that God will just open their spirit to hear what it is that He wants them to hear. But my answer is always pray and ask God. He promises that He'll give wisdom. And you know what? If we believe that, we'll do it. But we also do in a crisis, you know, what we truly believe. And I'm not sure we believe that. I don't think we do, that we believe that God will give us wisdom. No, He said that I will teach you and I'll instruct you and I'll counsel you and I'll keep my eye on you while you're going. He says, I'll put the words in your mouth. The fact that I'm standing up here now and saying these things to you is God. It's absolutely God. I say all the time, I have nothing to say, God. What am I going to say? It's like my mind goes blank. And then, you know, then He just, like, He gives you words, He gives you scriptures, things come to your mind. So just pray about it. And you know what's the best thing you can do? Live it out in your own life. Live it out. When my daughter separated her circle of responsibility from my circle of responsibility, she didn't have a clue what she was doing. She just did it because that's what I've been modeling for her. Live it out. The best gift you give to the people in your life is to be healthy yourself. And you're going to be healthy yourself when you're putting the big rocks in first and you're giving God an opportunity to show you what to do next. Because He will. When I was going through some of that conflict, we were at a church that was one of the most godly pastors I've ever known. I learned more under him than anybody I've ever sat under. He knew the word frontwards and backwards. He took the Greek and the Hebrew and he divided it up. And some people thought it was tedious and I just soaked all that up. When we went through that conflict, God showed me things in the word and that man would say to me, where is that at? Where is that at? But that's what God does. He shows me things. He shows you things that even people who know don't know. And I could take him right to the Word. I wasn't telling him anything that was my stuff. I said, this is in the Word. Here it is. And God will do that. So you just pray and just know that He'll show you. Thank you guys so much. You've just made this so much fun. I've been so blessed. Thank you very much.